Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rexroad here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking a look around the AFC South. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Michael DiRocco from ESPN, who covers the Jacksonville Jaguars. Michael, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you today?
We're doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, Michael, as you look at this Jags team, I don't have to tell you how tumultuous the season was a year ago with Urban Meyer in charge. I guess, number one, how much different is kind of the vibe or the feel around the team with that behind them now? And number two, how have you seen that manifest itself so far during Jags training camp?
It was an immediate 180 once they hired Doug Peterson and he got around the players and sort of calmed everything down. And, you know, he said in the spring that they needed to heal. That sort of happened, to be honest with you. There's just such a different atmosphere around the franchise. And it's not just in the locker room and on the field. It's, you know, on the business side and ticketing and marketing. I mean, it's just a complete and total flip from what it was like with Urban Meyer here. And you can see it on the practice field. This is a better team. Guys are having fun again. You can kind of tell a little bit. And they don't really want to talk about how bad things were last year anymore. But you kind of get little snippets and little things, you know, that come out. I can't remember which player it was early in camp said, you know, there's like a professional atmosphere around here, you know, which was clearly a dig at Urban Meyer last year. But there's a massive difference. Now, whether that means they're going to be a much better football team, I think that has a factor in it. But I don't, you know, it's not like this team's all of a sudden going to go from three wins to winning the AFC South.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to ask you, Michael. You kind of touched on it, but I know a lot of times in the aftermath of something, you're in it, you're covering it, but then in the aftermath, you get things that trickle out. Like, was it significantly a bigger bleep show than you realized last year in retrospect?
Well, I've had multiple people inside the organization in different areas tell me as bad as you thought it was worse. And then you're like, okay, so spill on details. And they're like, I don't really want to tell you. But, I mean, it's the same. You know what I mean? It's almost like it's a trauma, and they don't want to relive the trauma because it's too painful to relive it. I give Shad Khan credit, the owner. Like, he took a swing. I mean, what he had done in the previous 10 years really hadn't worked. You know what I mean? Gus Bradley, Doug Marrone was good for 1 year. Tom Coughlin, that ended in a disaster. So taking a shot at Urban Meyer, one of the most successful head coaches, it's a swing. I mean, swing for the fence. I get it. It was a good idea at the time, but it turned into just this unmitigated disaster. And, you know, we're going to see, former players, you know, DJ Chark, now with the Lions, had some stuff to say about it before. And I think guys, once they leave here again, you know, as the trauma heals, they'll be able to kind of talk about it a little more. But, yeah, multiple people have said, you know, it was worse than anyone really could ever know.
Michael DiRocco on with us here on Robbie and Rexroad. So, Michael, to that point, with Doug Peterson now in and the weapons offensively that were added this offseason, how do you kind of view the picture for Trevor Lawrence heading into his second year and maybe how set up he is, in your opinion, for success this year?
Yeah, you know, if you're ranking the offensive weapons here, you probably put the Jags in maybe the bottom half to bottom third of the league just overall. There's no Jamar Chase. There's no A.J. Brown. There's no, you know, Cooper Kupp on this roster. But what he has is significantly better than last year. His best receiver last year was Marvin Jones. And by the end of the year, you could even argue it was Laquon Treadwell. Now he's dealing with Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, who has been really one of the bright spots in camp in terms of down the field passing, an element that really we didn't see much of last year. You know, and then adding Travis Etienne back to the mix, you know, they didn't have him last year, obviously missed the year with a foot injury. He's got way more options this year. And I forgot to even mention Evan Engram. You know, much, much better options, much, much better. Let's not forget this, much, much better play calling, much, much better offensive design. You know, there's no excuse, there's no reason other than an injury for Trevor Lawrence not to make a big jump this year. Now, you know, is it a Joe Burrow jump? Yeah, I don't know. But, man, if this kid isn't, you know, a 25-touchdown, you know, single-digit interception season in 2022, then I think it would be disappointing because all the pieces are there for him to have a lot of success. You know, again, this isn't, you know, some of the elite talent here in the league, but it's much better than what he had.
Yeah, Mike, what's your sense for Trevor and I guess, one, how he's related to Peterson? I always felt like last year there was so much on him, so much focus on him, and then he constantly had to, like, answer for Urban Meyer. And then in the meantime, maybe not, he's not getting, like, the development year that you need as a rookie. And Peterson obviously has been very good at developing quarterbacks. Do you get a different sense even from Trevor Lawrence on a daily basis and how, like, his job is now? And what about just the way he's meshed with Peterson?
Yeah, you know, look, he's been – it was evident in OTAs and, like, starkly evident that he was so much more comfortable, so much more confident, and in such a better place mentally. I mean, let's not forget, you know, it's always a grind for these rookies, especially quarterbacks, to get drafted. You know, they got to go through that whole pre-draft process, the combine, all that other stuff. But you know, he wasn't able really to do much before they got here because he had the shoulder surgery in the offseason. So it was a pretty big mental and physical grind for him last year, compounded by the fact that he had to be the adult in the room and was the only guy that stood up and basically answered for this team every single week because his head coach didn't. And now with Doug Peterson, he's so much more relaxed. You know, it's a good mesh. You know, Doug is kind of a low-key guy, and he gives these guys he's a player's coach, so he gives them the benefit of the doubt on a lot of stuff, but he's also a guy that, like, look, if I give you this and you don't repay me with better work or, you know, a better performance, then it's going to get a little rough here. But so far, you know, it's been pretty good with him and Trevor. And he's also helped by the fact that quarterback coach Mike McCoy is a former quarterback in the league, played a little bit in the league. Offense coordinator Press Taylor is a former college quarterback. And passing game coordinator Jim Bob Cooter played at Tennessee as a quarterback. So, I mean, he's got, and you include Doug Peterson, four former quarterbacks around him helping him develop. And while you think that could be a recipe for disaster with too many cooks in the kitchen, it really hasn't been like that. He's been really good in camp. He's only thrown two interceptions in camp. He had another one dropped. But, I mean, there were days last year in camp and in practices during the regular season where he'd throw two, three picks in a practice. He has been so much better. It's markedly different. And if you're able to see him on the field, the confidence carries over without a doubt.
Michael DiRocco on with us here on Robbie and Rexroad. So, Michael, how do you view the defensive side of the ball for the Jags heading into this season?
Well, they spent a pretty good amount of money and pretty good amount of resources on it with Trayvon Walker and Devin Lloyd, the linebackers in the first round. Foye Luakun, they signed to a big deal to be the middle linebacker who's, you know, he led the NFL in tackles last year. You know, added Foley Fadakasi up front to help with his run defense, which was really, really bad the last couple of years. You know, Tyson Campbell, the second-year cornerback that they took at the top of the second round last year, has been arguably the best corner and their best defensive back in camp. Trayvon Walker is very, very raw as a pass rusher, but he's really quick and strong and powerful. So it's evident that once he kind of figures things out, he's going to really be a big-time problem for opposing offenses. So, you know, they haven't given up a touchdown in two preseason games, the first-team defense. So they're significantly better than they were last year. And, you know, I don't know, does that mean they're winning 10 games, 7 games, 6? I just know that if their defense plays the way it's played in the first two preseason games, then they're not going to be chasing points pretty much from the middle of the first quarter on. And when you're able to do that and you're able to maybe even play from ahead, things can be a whole lot different for you.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this team. I got to ask you, Michael, London, Chicago, like, is this franchise staying put? What's going on? I hear all these rumors floating around.
Yeah, well, they're finishing up, and it's going to be, I think it'll be done next summer, a $120 million football facility right outside the stadium here that includes locker room, weight room, practice fields, meeting rooms, all that other stuff. The city and the Jaguars split the cost on that, $60 million each. So I don't know much, but I know that if you're Shad Khan and you're investing $60 million in a facility here, you're not doing that to just turn around and leave. So, you know, stadium renovations are a big issue that's coming up, but I would be stunned if this franchise leaves here. I mean, it's just not. Like a London franchise, I think is never, ever going to work. The logistics of that are just too crazy. And I can't see them leaving here to go to Chicago. I think there's a huge shipyards development project that's right outside the stadium, right across the street, right along the river, that Shad Khan is developing into retail, office, apartments. You know, restaurants, bars, all a marina, all that kind of stuff. I can't see him investing all that kind of money into the area around here just to go ahead and move the franchise.
Michael, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Michael DiRocco from ESPN, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, does a great job covering the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks, is back. Sign up today at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is from Seafood Sensation. Seafood Sensation is a lively restaurant in the heart of Nashville that uses the best ingredients and provides a great atmosphere as well. You can get half off a $25 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning. Thanks to Michael DiRocco for joining us in the last segment. Joe, I will say, I'm not going to sit here and act like I have gigantic expectations for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. They are very intriguing to me from the standpoint of just what a disaster it was for them last year with that coaching staff and with that singular coach in particular. With Doug Peterson coming in, they spent a ton of money this offseason, both offensively and defensively. And you got Trevor Lawrence, who I still think is unbelievably talented heading into year two. Like, I could see where he specifically takes a massive jump this year. And I don't know what that means for their bottom line. I don't think there's any question they're going to be a better team this year than they were a year ago. But Trevor Lawrence is a really interesting guy to me heading into this year, because as you start to forecast the future of the AFC South and that division, he's going to play a big part of it at some point, and I'm very interested to see what he looks like this year with a competent head coaching staff around him.
Yeah, DiRocco got me all excited for the Jags. I'm not going to lie. I got some Jags fever after that segment, but no, I agree. I think as much as we ripped on the Jags for overpaying people, like if Zay Jones looks that good, well, I mean, they're upgraded. They've got, I mean, Ingram is worth mentioning. ETN, worth mentioning.
Kirk, baby.
They've accumulated some talent over the years, you know, and it's just one of those things where something was rotten. Now, I've still had it suggested to me that getting rid of Urban Meyer doesn't completely change the culture of that organization. So we'll see, but it's got to be better. I mean, the distractions he brought were so far beyond what anyone could have guessed. I mean, the freaking guy goes and like laps up with a young woman at a bar instead of flying home with his team. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, just couldn't be more disastrous. And then all the other stuff that comes out later, it's wild, man, wild. And Doug Peterson, I always thought was good. I think Doug Peterson was just really a victim of circumstance in Philadelphia more than anything. Like, they went all in, and the roster took some major salary cap hits that were costly. And I think he's pretty good, and I think he'll be good for Trevor Lawrence.
You know, going back to the Titans and Colts discussion that we had late last hour, a lot of people on the text line pointing out an advantage for the Titans that maybe people around the league don't spend enough time talking about, and that is the advantage at head coach with Mike Vrabel and Frank Reich. Now, I think Frank Reich is an okay coach. I think Chris Ballard is a good GM. And we'll leave the GM part of this out of it, even though I do think it's related somewhat here in this discussion, especially with these two. You've talked about the narrative that's out there with Ballard specifically. I really don't understand it for the most part. I think it is crystal clear at this point that the Titans have the significantly better coach. I like Frank Reich. I think he's good. Mike Vrabel is a great coach, and the Titans, I do think, have a pretty clear advantage there. Now, at some point, it's more about the roster and the players that you have than it is the coaching to some degree. But Mike Vrabel, I think, certainly gives the Titans an edge there.
Yeah, I don't think you could argue who's a better coach right now. I mean, I think it's pretty clearly Vrabel. I'm not down on Frank Reich to the point of, you know, that was a bad hire, he's a bad coach. There's been a few things in the last couple of years that are a little bit puzzling. And it was a big year for him. I feel like in Indy, there's a separation there. Now, who knows? I mean, who knows what Irsay thinks? But it seems like the narrative is still like Ballard's done a really good job. You know, the QB thing, trying to find an answer, but it's good roster. Reich, underwhelming. You can see Reich being in trouble if this year goes poorly. And frankly, it sounded like, I mean, both those guys were probably Reich more had to kind of argue for themselves after last season. Irsay was so pissed, and he should have been. So I think Reich is one of those. He's a smart guy. He's a very media friendly guy. A lot of people like him, but it comes down to performance, and there's just some strange things I think that they've done, in particular some of those games where Jonathan Taylor doesn't touch the ball, and just some of his decisions, even like, you know, some of the decisions specifically in the Titans games going for it. You know, they had the Titans on the ropes and kind of let them off the ropes with that overly aggressive decision he made in the first half last year in Indy.
Yeah.
And I know it's always easy to, I mean, Vrabel's made mistakes and been overly aggressive at times too, but over the hall here, there's a pretty decent amount of separation, I'd say, in terms of those two coaches.
Andy Ben on the text line says, both the Colts and Titans are built very similarly. The best players on both teams are at running back, defensive tackle, and Byard for Tennessee, and Nelson and or Leonard for Indy. Titans should probably be considered the favorite only due to having the same quarterback in the same system versus newcomer Matt Ryan in a new system in Indy. This coming from Andy Ben saying the Titans should probably be the favorite. Do we think that's legitimate, or is Andy Ben maybe doing some reverse psychology here on the text line? Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yeah, come on, Indy Ben. I count on you to get on there and tell everybody why the Colts are going to win the whole thing. And now you're talking about the Titans as favorites. I don't like this level-headedness, Indy Ben.
He's playing chess. We're playing checkers.
I guess so. He's trying to flip this around. He's sensing the mental edge the Titans are getting from everyone picking the Colts, so he's going to try to offset it. It's not going to work. But in all seriousness, I pretty much agree with that analysis. They're close. I just, again, my only problem is with anyone who thinks they know for sure this is such an easy call. Either way, it's not an easy call. It should be a great race.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's going to be a great race. The thing that I will say, if you're the Titans, you got that number one schedule. And look, I do think sometimes you can make way too much of the schedule heading into a year. Number one, it's based on the year before. Number two, there's no telling what the injury situation is going to look like. you know, I'm sure a lot of people terrified to see the Baltimore Ravens on the schedule last year, and then right. the Baltimore Ravens were missing half their team, you know, in November of last year. So nobody knows how exactly it's going to play out from that standpoint. But I mean, I said this a lot. There are a whole lot of good quarterbacks the Titans are going to have to play, including a guy named Aaron Rodgers that the Colts will not have to play this year.
That is true. No, I mean, it looks daunting. Then again, you could also look at, since we're talking about Vrabel, like the things you should be worried about is like the Giants game and
yeah.
you know, the Texans games and all that stuff, right? I mean, that's been the problem for the, and that is, by the way, I mean, that's the one thing I think for Vrabel, that's the next frontier other than, you know, winning the Super Bowl and like performing well in the playoffs after really five straight halves of underwhelming football. But getting to the point where we don't keep talking every year about, oh, they just beat the Bills, but, you know, watch out for whatever crappy team's next on the schedule.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by two-time NBA champion and five-time all-defensive player Don Chaney here on the program. Looking forward to that. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. You can kick off week one with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up with the promo code ROB to get in on the action. Then you can turn game day into payday all season long. I like the Titans to take down the Giants in week one. I think it's going to be a good game, but I think Derrick Henry is going to have a big game as well, over 100 yards rushing. But you take it any way you want to take it. Play your way and bet on more than just the final score. Wager on everything from touchdowns to total yards to catches. You can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't fumble your chance to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, with promo code ROB. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in two-time NBA champion, five-time all-defensive player, former NBA player and coach Don Chaney. Don, what's going on? Thanks so much for taking time to join us this morning.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We are great. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Don, I know you've got an event coming up that's really important to you this Saturday here in the Nashville area called Voices for the Heart. Can you tell us about what you're going to be doing here in town?
Yes, okay. This event is hosted by Pfizer, and you can attend it virtually by registering at yourheartsmessage.com/Don. And the event speaker would be cardiologist Dr. Don Rowe, and he's with the community organization in Reach One, Teach One. And you can also, you know, you can get additional resources at that same address, yourheartsmessage.com, and information about ATTRCM. But as you mentioned, the event will be held this Saturday, August 27th at 4 o'clock in Nashville.
So, Don, how personal is this for you? You were, I believe you were diagnosed with ATTRCM. And you had symptoms for a long time. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey with that and how important this is to you.
Okay, well, just give me, I'm going to sort of give you a brief on ATTRCM. ATTRCM is like a serious under-recognized and under-diagnosed type of rare disease, amyloidosis, that affects the heart and is associated with heart failure. And there are actually two types of ATTRCM, the wild type and hereditary type, which I have the hereditary type. The hereditary ATTRCM occurs due to a genetic mutation that is passed down through a relative. And the most common gene mutation associated with hereditary ATTRCM in the U.S., the V122I, is found almost exclusively in African Americans. And lastly, the approximately 3 to 4% of African Americans are thought to have the V122I mutation, although all the individuals with the V122I mutation develop symptoms of the ATTR. Some may not show the signs of it. So that's the most difficult thing in diagnosis, is that you may have the mutation, but you may not have the signs of the disease itself.
Well, Don, and to that point, it's obviously really important to raise awareness for this. Do I have this right that it took you almost 10 years for yourself to realize that you were experiencing some of those symptoms?
That's the problem with the disease itself, because it really mimics heart-related symptoms. And you know, the distinguishing difference is you get a carpal tunnel syndrome, you get fatigue, swelling in the hands and feet, and you know, those are the things that may differ from a regular heart problem. So those are the signs and symptoms that will raise awareness. A lot of doctors are not familiar, first of all, for looking for those symptoms when it comes to ATTR-CM, and they're not familiar with the fact that it affects African Americans at a disproportionately rate.
Don, I have so many basketball questions I would love to ask you. Mm-hmm. Such an incredible career. I've got to start with Bill Russell, of course, recently passed, and you are, I believe, the only Boston Celtic to have played with both Bill Russell and Larry Bird. But I just wanted to ask you about, you know, Bill Russell, your relationship with him, and also just how important you think he was, not just to basketball, but sports and society, and the impact that he had.
Well, he had impact in so many different areas. For me, I've always been, even in high school and probably a little bit before that, a Boston Celtics fan. So when I was drafted number one by the Celtics, I was just elated, because that's the team I always wanted to be associated with. I admired Russell and the rest of the cast, because they won. You know, their thing was solid basketball, beautiful basketball, and that unselfish basketball, good defense, and they really shared the basketball well. But they played together as a team, and I was so happy just to be a rookie on that particular team and to be coached, you know, and be associated with Bill Russell. He is probably the epitome of a great of a winner and a professional. I mean, he carried himself. When he walked on the floor, he was a professional. I mean, he knew exactly what he wanted to do, what he had to do, and he was always prepared. But he set examples for everybody, and the job he had as being a first player and coach, especially black player and coach, was exceptional. I don't think anybody can do that these days, have both jobs. But he did an excellent job of that in terms of being able to determine when it's time for him to pull himself out and substitute for himself. And at the same time, you get caught up in the game, you forget about your bench. So he was able to play the game and substitute at the same time and really go through different situations during the course of the game. So that's not an easy job. And I think if anybody could perform that duty, it would have been him, because he was just special. And I was fortunate because he, for some reason, he brought me in and put me under his wings. And I had been told prior to that he never really spent that much time with rookies. As a matter of fact, I complained to one of the players, I think it was Sam Jones or John Advocate Check, I forget, that he never talks to me. And and they said, well, you better be lucky, because the words he said to you are far in between the words he said to most rookies. He never even talked to rookies at all. At least he would acknowledge you were there and say a couple of things to you. So I guess after that I felt pretty good. But he never spent a lot of time with rookies, because when they walked on the floor, they were business. They were a team that had been together and won championships together. They knew what they had to do, and they did it. And you know, when I hear his name and I hear Michael Jordan and LeBron James, and all the great players in the league, you have to think about him, because he's such a great player and such a winner.
Don Chaney on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Don, to that point, as you look at the game today, What do you make of how the game is involved in terms or evolved in terms of the 3-point shot and how much it's used today? Just what do you make of the state of the NBA as we view it today here in 2022?
Well, I'm from the old school, but I still enjoy the game today. First of all, I think the athletes today are superior athletes. They're really, really talented. They do things. They're doing things now that I never thought an athlete could do. I mean, not just the smaller guys, but the bigger guys as well. They're just so perfect, I guess you can say, because they're athletic. They can jump. They can pass. They can shoot. But the game itself, I think it was designed, especially when they put the 3-point shot, for entertainment, and that's what it's all about. And the NBA, they've accomplished that. They wanted entertainment, and that's what they have with the 3-point shot and the way the game is played. Basically, the game is a perimeter game. For me, because I'm the old school, I like to see a little bit more structure. I like to see the big guy inside from time to time. I like to see a lot of different plays run and the defense react to the plays. It appears to me, and as I mentioned, I'm not knocking the game itself. I think the game is a beautiful game. I think it's a great entertainment game itself. But I like to see teams react to certain things that's happening on the floor. Everybody basically run the same plays now. And the game itself is played the same way. So, to a degree, for someone like me, it gets a little boring at times. But, I still enjoy it because it is exciting and you're never out of a game. That, to me, probably is the most positive of all, is that 4 minutes, 5 minutes, years ago, 20, 30 years ago, the game was over. Now, with a 3-point shot, the game is never over because you can always come back. So, it brings about, an entertainment thing, as I mentioned earlier, but I still would like to see a little of the old style into the game itself in terms of setting plays and more low post play.
Yeah, no doubt. Of course, Don, you were coach of the year with the Houston Rockets 1 year. You went to the Pistons. And I wanted to ask you about your last year with the Pistons was a first year for Grant Hill. So you got to welcome him into the league and coach him his first year. I think a lot of people don't realize what Grant Hill was on his way to becoming before he had his injuries. What kind of player was he, and what do you think he was headed if he didn't have those injuries?
Well, I think he would have been up there with the top guys because he was such a very well fundamental player. That's one thing I noticed about him. He's fundamentally. He was just a sound player. He wasn't a great shooter at the beginning. He knew his range. He didn't have great range outside the perimeter, but he knew his strengths. And he's one of those guys that's smart enough to know what his strengths are, and he utilizes it. He has a very quick step to the basket. Naturally, everyone knows he can jump very well. He dunks him whenever he can, and good defensive player. But what I really liked about him is that he was just fundamentally sound. And he was on his way up every year. You can see him improving every year. And, you can't control your injuries. That's the problem with professional basketball or any sports. You just can't control your injuries. But I think he would have been sensational had he stayed healthy.
Well, Don, it's been a treat to talk with you. We appreciate so much you taking time to come on our show this morning and talk about ATT-RCM as well. Looking forward to this event coming up on Saturday, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, and pleasure speaking with you guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Don. Don Chaney, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, NBA legend. We'll take your thoughts on our text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie Strode here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Don Chaney for joining us in the last segment. Joe, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Little old school, Don Chaney. I love it.
I did too. I didn't go robo, did I?
No, you're good.
Because Dennis sent the. Did you see Dennis's robo Joe?
I did.
That's pretty good. No, great stuff from Don Chaney. Incredible career. We didn't even get into. I mean, he played in the game of the century in college hoops. You know, UCLA,
yeah,
Houston, and like the Astrodome, a million people there. Elvin Hayes and Don. I mean, those Houston teams were incredible. Obviously, that was the heyday of UCLA's dynasty, and that was when big men ruled basketball. I'm kind of with it. I don't know if I agree that like they're all running the same plays. I think it's the most beautiful basketball to watch now, especially the way the Warriors play it. But I'm with him on. Yeah.
He just loves himself some Warriors.
Now, who's the champs? Remind me who won it all.
Relax.
Who's the dynasty?
Relax. Okay.
But I'm with him. Like, let's give the big guys the ball a little bit. A little post play still has value in basketball.
It does. We'll see if there's any post play that's worth a darn this year. Seems to be a lost art. I guess Joel Embiid sometimes.
Yeah,
there's some guys. Yeah.
I mean, there's very few like devoted to the low post players anymore, right? But they're still great big guys. I mean, I'm glad that he acknowledged, because sometimes, you know, you get the old school guys that's like, oh, we would have crushed these teams. I didn't hear that from Don Chaney, and I was very glad to hear that, because he recognizes that bigger, stronger, faster, better, more skilled happens in all sports as we progress through time.
So, Joe, as we look ahead to this week, the Titans taking on the Arizona Cardinals in practice before the preseason game coming up this weekend. Now, it is interesting. They're going to basically practice against each other one day, and apparently Vrabel and Cliff Kingsbury have talked about that, and that for the schedule and the health of the football teams, I believe was the term that he used, one day of practice really against Arizona. So a much different week this time around than it was last week against Tampa.
Yeah, so does this mean like so Arizona's coming in today.
Yeah.
And then they're going to practice one day, and then they're just going to be like, hey, can you guys just hang out around town for a couple days, and we'll see you for this very exciting preseason game Saturday.
I guess so.
Do you know how much video game time is possible in those 2 days?
Oh, my gosh. All these, like, play, you know, up, down, and game terminal, and all these different places. They better watch out. Kyler Murray's going to come in and spend a lot of money this weekend. It's going to be a big weekend for the local economy down here.
Are there any Call of Duty tournaments like this week? I mean, this could get interesting.
I don't know. It was hilarious because, you know, he was on the sideline for their preseason game over the weekend, and he was helping call plays, I guess. And somebody pointed out, like, the headset he was wearing was his video game headset. He, like,
stop. Has,
like, yeah, dead serious.
No, it wasn't.
I will find the tweet. He was wearing, like, a video game headset. This guy is – maybe he wasn't calling plays. Maybe he's over there, you know, talking about different strategies in Call of Duty. I can't wait. Like, I have never been more excited for a season to watch Arizona Cardinals football in my entire life. But every time he throws a pick, it's just what it's going to be. I'm looking forward so much to Kyler Murray this year.
I'm just sad that the Cardinals and Texans don't play. I mean, can you imagine the, like, big neck / video game jokes that you could combine into that? I mean, that would almost be like, you know, the mind, like Scanners, you know, the movie Scanners.
It's probably good for our show that it's not
that reference. It probably is. Yes. We'd get off topic. Yes. Too much. What is our topic, by the way?
Football. We're going
the
with
Cardinals. Football. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Adam in Portland texting in. Let's hope Vrabel and Cliff Kingsbury fight this week. Not a Cliff Kingsbury fan. I don't think that would end well with Cliff Kingsbury. Probably just needs to sit that one out.
Yeah, I don't.
He's too pretty to be getting in fights.
Yeah, I don't think that. Yeah, like Cliff would be, he'd be down the list there in terms of the like who would be the worst fights for an NFL coach, like the dude in Miami now for sure.
He's at the bottom of the list. Mike McDaniel. Yeah.
Yeah, McDaniels. Yeah, like what would be the absolute worst fight? Would Kingsbury possibly be on the bill of the worst possible NFL coach fight? Like just like slap fight, you know, that you could put together. Maybe. I'm sure there's somebody we're not thinking of.
Look, LaFleur wouldn't be great. He would not be great.
Yeah, LaFleur would be a tough sell, man. You know, I mean, I guess I could buy it like McDaniels, Staley. I mean, again, like seriously, NFL coaching is the geek squad. Like they're gonna fix your laptop, but you know, we need more Dan Campbells, Mike Vrabels.
Look, Pete Carroll's almost 71, and I'd probably put him in the middle of the league. He could take half these guys.
Yeah, that dude, he's intense, walking around shirtless, all ripped up and everything. Yeah. Like, calm down, dude. But yeah, I mean, like, then you got like Daboll and McCarthy. Jeez, it's a mess. It's a mess in this league. What's become of this league?
I don't know.
I mean, like, at least Andy Reid, like, you just have to love him.
Yeah.
You know, he's so lovable with the cheeseburgers and, you know, but I mean, Zach Taylor, gosh. I don't know, man. Pretty weak.
There'd be a lot of options.
Yeah, Kingsbury, man. I apologize to Cliff Kingsbury. He actually might be only like in the low 20s.
Yeah, there might be some room before you get to him. I got a text that says Andy Reid versus Mike McDaniel might be the worst fight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good. There's a lot of combinations you can come up with. There are very few combinations you can come up with that would actually be good.
Now that I think about it, like I'd probably pay money to see Vrabel and McDaniel, just how that would go and how Vrabel would handle that. I mean, he could literally punch him into the ground.
Adam in Portland says he thinks he's a karate brown belt. McDaniels. He looks like one of those dudes who took karate to ward off all the people he burned, who in turn wanted to fight him. Okay,
he might be, maybe so.
You may have a point there.
So, what are you looking for this week between the Titans and the Arizona Cardinals? We are a week away from the day, Joe Rexroad, to the final roster cutdown day to the 53-man roster. So, the final week of preseason football is upon us.
Yeah, and you know, there's one more cut today, by the way. The Titans only have one cut to make today, one player. Yep. They cut four yesterday. But, yeah, I think it's just – look, it's a better opportunity for the defense. I mean, we're going to joke about Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray can put stress on the defense, and obviously maybe the entire skill set isn't on display. It sounded like Vrabel said there wasn't a ton of team that they're going to do. They're going to do seven and everything, but they are going to do two-minute.
Yeah.
So I look for that offense in particular to give the Titans defense a better look than the Bucs did last week. That should be the biggest value out of this one day before the Cardinals have some free time in Nashville.
Yes. I mean, it's a defense too, an offense too, that gave the Titans fits last year. And, you know, at some point you're going to take on a quarterback that can hurt you in the running game. And Kyler Murray certainly fits that mold. So, you know, how does the Titans defense handle that? And then offensively, you know, another big test for the offensive line. We've talked about the line all day long with Raiden's moving inside. We'll see if that continues this week. We'll see if Petit Frere gets some good looks against that defensive front for Arizona. Lots of interesting things that could happen that way when it comes to another big test for the offensive line that we're getting close to go time with this offensive line with the Giants coming up in week one. By the way, some news this morning on that front. Looks like Thibodeau could be out 3 to 4 weeks with an MCL sprain. So not as bad as it could have been for Thibodeau there. Will he be ready for the Titans game? It seems like he may not be, but we'll wait and see what happens on that front.
Yeah, but it doesn't look likely for him, which is a break for the Titans. But glad to see that it wasn't super serious. By the way, my own personal text line, Jimmy Wyatt, points out that Arizona will be practicing Thursday at Vanderbilt because, of course, Vanderbilt's in Hawaii. So there you go. So they will head on over to Vanderbilt and practice there.
There you go. Bet you can find some good Call of Duty games over at Vanderbilt.
The dorms, all there. The kids are moving to the dorms. They're bringing in their PlayStations. Oh, it's an absolute candy land.
Just can't wait for it. It's going to be amazing to see what happens this week. And maybe eventually, is this ever going to be let go? This is still my favorite NFL story of all time with Kyler Murray and the independent work study clause.
It's going to take years to get this out of your system. I have a feeling it's going to take a long time, man. So we may as well just enjoy it and lean in on it.
Yep. And they can get mad at the media all he wants, but this is the fault of the Arizona Cardinals, and it makes it even better. That apparently had his game headset on the other night. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase, Willie, and D-May is coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.